Chapter 24. A Marvelous Substance. "Say, that's a good way to have a building," observed Jack in a low voice to his chum. "Those who can't get in can see just as well what's going on as if they were here. But I wonder what he's saying."
"Probably telling his people about us," replied Mark,
and this seemed to be so, for Silex Corundum, as they later learned, was the name of the ruler of Mars, frequently motioned toward the adventurers, who stood in a group in front of the platform. Much interest was manifested by the throng, and even those on the platform, who seemed to be members of a sort of council or governing body, could not restrain their interest. When the chief ruler had ceased speaking, the Martian with the triangle on his head, the one who had first greeted the world travelers, stepped forward and made an address. "He's telling them how we got here," was Mark's opinion, and Jack nodded. When this one had finished, the guide who had conducted them to the palace had his turn, and at greater length he described the strangers, the curious craft in which they had arrived on the planet, and many other details, which, of course, our friends could not comprehend. This done, Silex Corundum made another address, and at its close a great blackboard was brought forward. Some pieces of chalk were handed to Mr. Rauman, and to Professor Henderson, and by signs they were invited to illustrate something of themselves and their wonderful journey. "What shall we draw?" asked Mr. Henderson. "First see if you can make them understand something of the Earth where we came from," suggested Mr. Rauman. And the professor, who was a good draftsman, soon placed on the board a sort of map of the universe, indicating the position of Mars, the Sun, the other planets and the Earth. To his surprise, a delighted shout told him that he was understood. The chief ruler, with a rapid motion, pointed to a great telescope, located in one corner of the big audience chamber. He motioned for the travelers to look through it, and after it was adjusted he pointed to the drawing of the Earth on the board, and indicated that the adventurers could see their own planet through the telescope. Mr. Rauman looked first. Then he uttered an exclamation.
"Can you really see our Earth?" asked Jack.
"I can. Look for yourself. Wonder the Martians understand something about us. They can clearly make out the shapes of our continents." Jack peered through the eyepiece. There, far off, shining in the light of the distant sun, which was now on the other side of Mars, he saw the Earth they had left about 2 weeks ago. It was like looking at some map in a geography, and he could clearly make out the shapes of North and South America.
"Take a look, Mark," he cried.
"Out the place where we live, and where we built the Annihilator." In turn they all gazed at the Earth, distant 35 millions of miles, but which was made very plain to them through the powerful glass. Silex Corundum made a motion, as of somebody flying through space, and looked inquiringly at the travelers.
"He wants to know how we got here," interpreted Mark.
"I'll draw a picture of the projectile," said Mr. Rauman, and he put on the board one containing many details. So interested was the chief ruler and his cabinet, that they all came down off the platform to examine it more closely. They appeared to understand everything but the Ethereum motor, but Mr. Rauman illustrated the force by which it was worked, by pointing to the metal boxes containing the red substance, which gave out light as well as power, indicating that some force like that worked the motor. This appeared to satisfy the questioners, and after some talk among themselves they motioned that the travelers would be given a place to sleep.
"I'd a heap sight rather have softened he eat," said Washington, when it was made known that they were to retire.
"I'd just like to get back to my kitchen. I just know my Shanghai rooster needs some corn, and as for that crazy man, maybe he's broken loose."
"That's so," agreed Mr. Rauman.
"If we don't get back, we can't give him anything to eat."
"Let's try to make them understand," suggested the professor, and, accordingly, with chalk, they pictured that they had left behind them, in the projectile, an enemy of theirs, who was bound and helpless. Silex Corundum appeared to understand, and he indicated that the unfortunate man would receive attention. The travelers were then led out of the palace. They found, instead of being urged along by the thought power, however, that they were now allowed to walk. And they also noticed that they could go very rapidly, with little exertion, due to the fact that they only tipped the scales at about a third of their usual weight. "This is better," observed Jack. "I'd rather walk than be floating along the way we were." "Yes, I guess they were so anxious to question us that they couldn't wait for the ordinary forms of locomotion," said the professor. "Now that they know something about us, they will let us do as we please for a while." One of the Martians, who seemed to be a minor official, led them out into the street. They found that it was lighted by means of the same metal boxes that were in the palace. Overhead were the two tiny moons of Mars, but they gave but little light, and had it not been for the wonderful red substance, the streets would have been quite dark. "This stuff is what makes Mars seem so, I read, when we look at it with telescopes from our Earth," observed Mr. Rauman. "It is a very marvelous chemical. I must get some to examine." "I wonder where they'll put us?" asked Jack, but his question was answered a few moments later, when they were ushered into a finely built house of generous size, and by signs their guide indicated that they were to make this their home. It was nicely furnished, though in a different manner from houses in the world, and there were many scientific books and instruments in it. "The Martians must study all the while," observed Mr. Henderson. "No wonder they have such big heads. All their intellectual faculties are wonderfully developed." "At the expense of their arms, legs, and bodies," said Jack. "I fancy I could fight half a dozen of their biggest men." "But we're not going to," said Mr. Rauman. "At least, not as long as they treat us decently." "And now for something to eat," added Henderson. Their guide showed them a dining room, where they found a table filled with food that looked very appetizing. The Martian motioned for them to eat. "I want tea find where my kitchen is going to be," declared Washington. "If I'm going to cookie, I want to see how I'm going to do it." The Martian seemed to understand what was wanted, for he led the way to another apartment, where it was evident that cooking was done, as there were pots, pans, and what looked like a stove in it. "But I don't see no coal," objected the colored man. "How I gwine to cook without coal to make a fire?" The Martian opened the square iron box that seemed to be the stove. Inside was a small metal box, which he also opened, disclosing a lump of the red substance. "They cook with it, too," exclaimed Mr. Rauman. "Doubt that they warm their houses with it in winter. A wonderful substance. Most marvelous. It exceeds my wildest dreams. Light, heat, and power. Our fortunes are made. To Mars. And it's a good thing they've got something to eat," remarked Jack. "Come on, I'm half starved." "I'll wait on table for you," said Washington, as they went back to the dining room, and the Martian left. They sat down, and the colored man was about to pass the victuals, when, to the surprise of all, the center of the table began to revolve, and the dishes of food went with it, passing slowly in front of each one in turn. "Good land a massy!" cried Washington. "The table movin'. Through space to Mars by Rockwood,